presented by TSMC.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook Deputy Editor Zach Stanton. It is Tuesday, April 23rd, and here's what's driving the day. Today, in a Manhattan courtroom, Justice Juan Merchan is expected to start the day without the jury as he considers whether to hold former President Donald Trump in contempt for a series of recent comments the prosecution alleges violated a gag order. Now, there are two questions here. First, whether Trump violated the gag order or not. If he didn't, then the case will move ahead as planned. And then, if the judge agrees that Trump violated the gag order, the question will be what to do about that. And the options span a pretty wide range from, you know, basically a stern warning, a sort of slap on the hand, to possibly sending Trump to jail for a very short stint, though if he did that, it would come as a surprise to the former prosecutors that Politico reporters have spoken with. Then, once that is settled, the case of the People versus Donald Trump continues, as former National Enquirer Chief David Pecker returns for a second day of questioning. The prosecution witness took the stand yesterday, but the day was cut short on account of both a juror's dental emergency and the start of Passover, and due to Passover observances, today's hearings are expected to end around 2 p.m. A few miles north, in Morningside Heights, tensions remain high as pro-Palestinian demonstrations continue to roil the Columbia University community. And though the student protests have been largely peaceful, they've also been party to a number of anti-Semitic incidents. Videos in recent days have shown throngs of keffiyeh-clad young people chanting for, among other things, burning Tel Aviv to the ground and expressing, quote-unquote, love for Hamas, the group responsible for the October 7th terrorist attacks in Israel. And yesterday, a number of prominent politicians entered the fray to condemn the anti-Semitism on display at Columbia. The Republicans in New York's congressional delegation called for University President Manoush Shafiq to resign, a call that Pennsylvania Democratic Senator John Fetterman joined in a statement likening the situation on campus for Jewish students to the 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Four Jewish House Democrats visited the campus yesterday and expressed concern about anti-Semitism, and President Joe Biden condemned the actions of demonstrators that he deemed anti-Semitic, while also criticizing those people who don't understand what's going on with the Palestinians, to use his phrase. Today, Biden will be in Tampa, Florida, for a campaign event, which is an odd choice given how far the state has swung to the right in recent elections. But it seems that there's a bit more going on there than meets the eye. And joining me now to discuss that, and what to watch out for in Florida, is Deputy National Editor Zach Montalaro. Good morning, Zach.
Hey, Zach. Good morning.
I'm excited that we're here for another Zachapalooza, which I think our tens of listeners have demanded. So today, President Biden's in Florida. We've heard in recent weeks that Democrats think that the state is somehow winnable for them this fall. I'm not quite convinced of that. I'm not sure where you stand on that. But what is the thinking behind this trip? What is going on here?
Yeah, you know, I'm not quite convinced of that either. And I guess more importantly, neither are our colleagues down in Florida. But that's almost beside the point. What the president today will be talking about in part will be Florida's 6-week abortion ban that's set to go into effect a week from tomorrow. And Biden is going down there to make the case that, well, this is what happens when you elect, quote, MAGA Republicans, unquote. So even if Florida isn't going to be competitive in November, it can still be an incredibly useful foil for Biden, because look at a state that used to be a swing state not that long ago, and now look what happened. At least if you're Joe Biden, under a Republican, there's an abortion ban, there's loosening gun laws, there's, in the words of the Democrats, book bans. Florida is going to fulfill the role basically of what New York or California do for Republicans at this point.
So Florida is the Democrats' version of what Republicans have done with California, pointing to it as like liberal California, San Francisco values, that type of thing.
Yeah, that's exactly what they want to do, at least. And, you know, the other parallel with California that's a fun one is, yes, you know, Republicans love to hate on California and Democrats are getting there with Florida, but it's still both very important states for fundraising. So the president, I don't believe, is going to do any fundraising today in Florida. But what these candidates do is that they'll talk down to states, and then they'll show up and they'll get huge, you know, fundraising checks. California is the biggest state in the country. Florida is the third biggest. There's a lot of rich folks there. So it has both the ability to be demonized to the rank and file and demonized for your messaging, and then also to turn around and cash in with big fundraisers as well.
So how do Florida Democrats feel about this? What are we hearing from folks on the ground there who maybe would like a more, earnest effort to try and win the state on the part of Democrats?
Well, Florida Democrats insist that we are wrong. We being, you know, you, me, all our colleagues. They say, no. Florida is still in play. And I take their point a little bit. 2022 is an outlier. I think sometimes we talk about like Florida being so far gone. Joe Biden lost it by 3 points in 2020. And there was hundreds of millions of dollars spent in the state. So it's not that long ago that Florida is competitive. And they take Joe Biden at his word at this point. You know, the Biden campaign put out a memo last month, and, you know, memos worth about the way it's printed on in politics. But they put out a memo last month saying, listen, we know Florida is tough, but we think it's winnable for a few reasons. Yes, it's tough. But look, we have this abortion ballot measure on the ballot in November. Donald Trump's pretty broke. Florida Democrats know it's tough. They're not saying that this is, you know, that this should supplant even a North Carolina in the pecking order in battleground states, but they're happy to see the president come to town. And they think this can basically at this point only help because, you know, Florida Democrats are at such an endear of power at this point. There's really nowhere worse to go for them.
And I imagine that there's some long-term calculus here, too, when you think about the fact that Florida's governor is Ron DeSantis, a man who, of course, was unable to defeat Donald Trump in the primaries this year, but whose name is on the lips of everyone looking at 2028. And I can see him, on the one hand, sort of reveling in being the Democrats' perceived enemy, the boogeyman that they point to as an example of everything that Republicans will do in government that Democrats are opposed to. But on the other hand, he also doesn't want to be saddled with that image heading into perhaps another four-year cycle where he has national ambitions.
Yeah, it kind of reminds you of that, what felt like a long time, but it was probably only 7 months when, you know, former President Trump really wasn't on the political scene. And I don't know, we'll call it summer 2021. And then 6 months later, when Democrats made Ron DeSantis that big boogeyman, you heard less and less and less about Trump and more and more and more about DeSantis. Of course, DeSantis's presidential campaign totally flamed out. But in the moment at that time, if DeSantis was a nominee, this wouldn't be all that much different from what Biden would be doing. We could see that again in 4 years. 2028 is, I think, five lifetimes away at this point. So I don't want to get too ahead of myself. But, you know, if there is a 2028 election that has a Governor DeSantis in it, you know, moments like this is kind of what we'll point to is, you know, look, he remained on the political scene. He remained in the mind of his top rivals as well, that being the Democrats.
All right. Well, we'll leave it there. Thanks so much, Zach.
Thanks, Zach.
And for your schedule today, the House is out while the Senate is in and voting starting at 1 p.m. on the foreign aid bill the House passed on Saturday. The senators can strike a deal to speed up a final passage vote, the bill funding Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, and potentially banning TikTok, could be headed to Biden's desk tonight. I'm Zach Stanton. Thanks for listening.
TSMC's investment of over $65 billion in Arizona marks the largest foreign direct investment in a greenfield project in U.S. history, bringing the most advanced semiconductor manufacturing to the U.S. TSMC's over 500 customers include some of the world's best-known technology companies. As their foundry partner, TSMC helps them unleash their innovations by supporting capacity for leading-edge technology.